has to. Someone has to tell me where we're up to. Sifvah. We haven't done Sifvah yet. Okay, great. Let's go. Sifvah. Okay. Sifvah brings down a big machlokas rishonim. Tosos, the machaber passing like Tosos. Talking about mamid. There's a whole machlokas in the Sefer Shabbos whether we go by the mamid in Tumah V'Tahara or not. Obviously, we all know the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara depend very much on what a kli is made out of. Very different rules for different materials. What if a kli is made out of one thing, but it's kept standing, or it only works because of the support of another material. So how do we classify it halachically? So, first of all, there's a question of, in Tumah V'Tahara, do we go by mamid or not? But the more important question is, how does that translate? Let's assume that we care about the Dabar HaMamid in Tumah V'Tahara. How does that translate to Tfilas Kelim? So Tosus says, Kli Eish She'yesh Bo Chashukin Shel Barzel, Mibachutz. Right, yeah, very good. It tells you you can get it from Tosus. Shemamidim also inotan tefila. This is very common. You ever seen like old movies or something? These wooden barrels made of like, you know, slightly curved wooden planks all put together. But how do you keep them in a barrel so they don't fall apart? So you put a band of metal outside that keeps, like glue's not going to do it. You put a band of metal outside and that keeps them together. So it's a wooden kli, but it's clearly only held up by this metal, classic maimid. So Tosfos says that when it comes to Tfilas Kelim, we don't care about the regular classification of identity of the kli. We care about the part that touches the food. Because here it's kli suda, it's the model of what interacts with the food. Therefore, even if there's a metal maimid, but if it's on the outside and only the wood touches the food, then it is, then it's no problem. Then it's no problem. And that's the Psak of Tosos. The Machaber follows Tosos. However, the Shach, he points out that in the Beis Yosef, I mean, obviously the final Psak of Machaber, we assume is what he wrote in the Shulchan Aruch. But in the Beis Yosef, it sounds like he leans towards a different direction. So the Shach here, in Sifkut Yud Beis, Paskin's like my Rami Rutenberg, and is Choshen of Rami Rutenberg. My Rami Rutenberg says, no, we use the regular rules and follow the maimid. Therefore, since the wood barrel is only held together by metal, we consider it to be metal and it needs tefillah. That's machlokes between the Tosos, says we only care what's inside, and the Machaber follows him, versus the Maharam, who says, we care about the maimid, and the Shach says you should tovel without a bracha. He doesn't have to mevada you care about the maimid. He just says you should be suffering and tovel without a bracha. Halacha lemaisa, the Taz follows the Machaber here, the Gra follows the Machaber here, and the Minag of Poskim and the Minag of Olam nowadays is to ignore the Shach. And even if something is a metal maimid, if the inside is all wood or plastic or some other neutral material, then we're not machber like the Shach. So the Minhag Olam is like the Machaber here. The Badri has a Beir where he discusses the we've already decided that's okay. Where he discusses the Brakra Davua where he discusses the relationship, you know, it's the same machlokes Machaber and Shach, right? In the beginning of the Siman in here, about the inside being wood or plastic or whatever, and the coating being metal, versus the inside being wood and the mamid being metal. Right? They're two different echitimses. Both of them, one side says, well, the inside that touches the food is not metal. The other side is, well, either the coating outside is metal or the strengthening outside is metal. You know, the thing that holds it together outside is metal. Is it the exact same machlokas or not? So it's not so clear. The Badi points out that it seems to be the same machlokas. So a lot of Achronim assume it's the same machlokas. And the Minig, in both cases, against the Shach, like the Machaber, to only worry about what touches the food and not to worry about what's on the outside. But he points out that in the opinion of many Achronim, you could be more machmir in one case than the other, because you could say, well, we don't care about the mamid outside, but we do care about the coating. So the coating is like, really takes over the kli. Or we don't care about the coating, so that doesn't do anything. But we do care about the mamid. So you don't have to say it's totally ha-ba-ha, but a lot of Achronim assume it is, and it's at least similar, because on the one hand, you have some significant presence on the outside, in the form of either a complete coating on the outside, which is significant, because it coats the whole thing, or a mamet on the outside, which is significant, because it holds it up. On the other hand, the part that touches the food is wood or plastic or some other neutral material. So they're definitely similar machlokos at the very least.
This tosis would agree to the Ramah and Exif. The Ramah on the inside, you wouldn't need to tovel.
I think so. Now, okay, that is Sifvav going on to Sif Zayin. Yeah.
Rosh Hashanah, the rat you kill the rat, even though she has oil on top. Is that from the Ramah or nothing?
No, that there the rat is pure metal. There's not the question. Isn't the identity of the rat? The question is whether you consider the rat to be a similar thing, because the rat doesn't touch the food.
Yeah.
So maybe you could say the same svara. Since the rack doesn't touch the food, then even though it does most of the work, we shouldn't care, which is,
we say it's like nothing.
Right, unless you say that here, he considers the rack to be touching the food because, we ignore the aluminum foil and revatal that. But you're right, there could be a taina against that to be mako. I hear the taina. Zayi. Koshal kesem mechuber kli eitz tsarich tevila. If you have here, the actual cup is kesef. It's just it's a bit of a discussion exactly what's the case of koshal kesef ha mechuber bikli eitz. But at first glance, it seems like a pretty reasonable case. Here, the actual cup is silver. There's just a metal. Sorry, there's just a wood thing that's attached to it. But the actual cup that holds your drink is silver, so it makes sense that you should need to tovel it. Now, the question here is, what exactly is the case? There are two potentially different scenarios. One scenario is that the wood on the outside is not a mamet. It's a silver cup, and it's attached to a wooden part, but the wooden part doesn't really accomplish that much. Maybe it's decorative, or maybe it just happens to have a second function or something. So if the wood's not mamid, then it's a davar pashut that it's chayiv in tevila. You have essentially a silver cup. The silver cup does the job. It's what touches your wine. There happens to be some wood attached to it. But what difference should that make? It's like if you have a metal pot with plastic handles, would you think that you wouldn't have to tovel it? Or if you have a metal pot and if you turn it upside down, it was a plastic something else. Well, whatever. The real kli is metal. That's not controversial at all. What's controversial is, what if the wood is the minded? What if you have a silver cup and the wood is the minded? Right? Like, let's say there's a silver cup, but the whole, you can't put it down, right? Because it would just fall. And there's only wood that actually holds it up. Where the wood somehow holds the silver together, although usually silver can hold itself together because it's cast into one piece. But let's say the wood is minded to silver. What if this is the flip case of Sifvav, right? You have silver and the minded is wood. So what's the din if you have silver and the minded is wood? So this is a three-way machlokes. What if you have, two pasillas. You have metal, a metal cup, but the minded is wood. Would we follow the maimed to be mekel or not? So, now obviously, or would we at least follow the maimed to be choshesh not to make a bracha or not? So, the machaber sounds like, when he said tzarech tevila, does that mean bevadai or misafik? Stam, it sounds like bevadai. It sounds like, who cares what the wood does? We don't care about the maimed at all. Right? Which would be consistent with sivav. That is the pshat of the Taz and the Gra. The Gra and the Taz say that even so, it's chayav bivadai, right? And meaning, you make a bracha. Because in Tefillah's Kalim, we don't care what the mind is. We care what touches the food. And it's metal that touches the food. And that is the push of shot in the Mechaber.
Just go back to the case before, where it's not mounted, so it's just two pieces next to each other. Is that all considered one cleat? Like, would I also have to tovel the wooden part?
So I'll be pashtus, yes. Although we'll see Rav Moshe's chiddush. We'll see Rav Moshe's chiddush. It's mamish, like a different function or something. I'll be pashtus, you would think, yes. The Shach, however, wants to say that can't be what it means. The Shach says no. The Shach says, of course, if there's a wooden maimid, right, the Shach says, we do care about the maimid. We are a suffix that maybe we should follow the maimid. Right? So the Shach says that there's no bracha. It's only a suffix. There's no bracha. And he says the machaber meant a case where the wood was not mined. The machaber says you're chayiv when the wood is not mined. But if the wood is mined, that's only a suffix. So you have to bring the machaber into a side here and say, no, if it's mined, that's only a suffix. And the Taz quotes from Lavush, one second, who quotes in the, who else is it? The suffix and Yutova without a bracha, and he says that's what the Mechaber meant by Tzara Tzvila without a bracha. So the Lavush says, no, we should be Choshesh for the Maimed. And we should be Choshesh for the Maimed. And therefore, you should tovel without a bracha. The Mechaber says, Tzara Tzvila means without a bracha. The Shach says, no, we're Choshesh for the Maimed, tovel without a bracha. And the Mechaber is talking about a non-Maimed case. He's irrelevant. Well, the Taz and the Gras say, no, we don't care about Maimed. Look what we said in Sivvav. Look what the Mechaber said in Sivvav. And you tovel it with the bracha. Halacha l'maisa, since we said the minag in Sivvav was to not worry about the Maimed, right? The minag in Sivvav is that if the Maimed is metal, we don't care. If you can use it without toveling. So you would think that we should pass it in Siv Zion. Then we don't care about the maimed, and if the maimed is wood, you should tovel it with the bracha. However, halach l'maisa, because we're very worried about suffix brachos, the Aruch HaShulchan paskins in this case, it doesn't happen that often. You pretty rarely have things which are metal with a wooden maimed, or a plastic maimed, or a cheres maimed, this is a pretty rare case. But if it would happen, halach l'maisa, the Aruch HaShulchan says not to make a bracha, even though we don't really care about the maimed, he says, you know what? Because of chumash brach, I'm adding a little. Because of chumash brach latala bichoshesh. Who knows? Maybe you're putter either way. Maybe you're putter if the inside is wood, and you're putter if the maimed is wood. Who knows? This theme of tefilas kelim, we're not exactly sure what the principles are. So maybe you're only chai if the inside is wood and if metal, and the maimed is metal. Therefore, he says to bichoshesh and tovel without a bracha. If it's metal with a wooden maimed, even though when you have again wood, but a metal maimed, we pass in your potter legamre, and we don't tovel at all, which means we don't care about the maimed. But nonetheless, when it comes to making a bracha or a choshesh, who knows? Maybe your potter in both cases. Maybe there are two conditions to the chiyuv, and we don't make a bracha.
I think the final round now we have a baby spoon. The handle.
The plastic handle and the metal spoon. Really? I thought
the opposite.
I think usually the plastic is just the tzipoy, though. I don't think they ever attach metal to plastic. Although, whatever, you have metal knives with plastic handles, etc.
Does
it
bother you? You can't really use a knife without the handle.
I think we assume that it's an interesting question. The mice, I think we assume that even if they handle plastic, we still tovel it with a bracha. Although it's an interesting question.
Isn't there metal in the
handle? Only a little. Truth is, I don't know. I never took it apart to check.
Depends on the knife.
Right.
A really good knife, it goes all the way down to the end.
Right. Could be that you could use it without the handle. Not sure. Yeah.
Fancy pans, cutting boards, they're like wood, and then there's like silver inlay, and there's like glass on the top. That's
wood, silver inlay, glass on top? I think they're chayim, because the glass on top is a perfectly fine cutting board with neasma. Everything on the bottom is just to look pretty. Right? To the best of my knowledge, the wood and the silver don't add kol shehu to the cutting of the challah. The glass is purely for cutting, the other parts are purely for decoration. And so l'chora here, you have a case where it's a glass kli and the glass is used and everything else is decorative. So, and the sepoy of wood is on the outside. So l'chora it's chayv in tefila. Now, I'm not sure exactly some of these things. Yeah, so lemaisa, in this case, it seems to me you can take off the glass in Tovah. Like, it's not like a case where sometimes if you take out the glass part, then you demolish the whole thing, and then you can't necessarily total something when it's demolished and put it back together. But over here, the glass is perfectly fine in and of itself. You can cut on the glass with or without the decoration, so you can unscrew the glass and total the glass. See, yeah, totaling these wood things is not always so pashut, because, I mean, most wood things, if you get them wet once, they won't break. The problem is, if you have wood that's like laid or connected to other things, then there's no room for the air to make it dry, and then it'll just rot, and the whole thing will be garbage. So you have to be very careful with, I'm pretty sure almost all wood things, you can dunk them in a mikvah for 1 second and take them out, and they'll dry and they won't break. But if the wood has anything attached to it, then it's very problematic. I don't know, consult someone who knows what they're talking about. But in this case, you can usually take off the glass and total it by itself.
You wouldn't have to total the bottom part of that.
No, the bottom part of the, no, the, you mean the silver inlay in the bottom part? The silver inlay is garnished.
Those things usually made by Jews.
What?
Are those things usually made by Jews?
Could be that generally things which are like artistic are often made by Jews, so that would be a good hara. You know, like the Hatzorfim Kiddush cups and things like this, usually things that are artistic and Jewish are made by Jews. At least if they cost a lot of money.
But,
okay, that's a good hara. Anyway, Viker. continuing in Zion, v'chein rechayim shel pilpulin shebetocha eitz yesh barzel kavusha tokun botzer tvila. Everyone has this at home, right? Sometimes they're even made of wood, but you have wood or plastic pepper mills, right? People are fancy, right? So people who aren't fancy have like pepper shakers that look like salt shakers. They just have a P instead of an S and one hole instead of three and whatever. But people who are properly fancy, you never shake pepper that's been ground a million years ago. That's a Mefurish Gemara and Beitza. You have a pepper grinder. And the grinder, the grinding part has to be metal because it has to be a very sharp blade. And the rest of the part is plastic or wood if it's decorative, etc. So that needs to be toveled because the metal touches the food and it's the main part. The whole point is to grind your pepper. So then clearly that needs to be toveled, even though like it's not all metal, but the metal is the main part and touches your food, so it needs to be toveled. V'chein ha-mashpechel shel barzel or barzel shel barzel shar mashal shum shichim. Tefillah, likewise, if you have funnels or faucets of metal that help you like get your liquids, then that needs tovling.
You buy a pepper grinder that's disposable. I mean, if you buy this pepper inside and you use it for with the heter, you know, a lot of people in the bottle to find that as well.
Okay, let's come back to that. I think no, but it's a little more complicated. So, well, it depends what you mean by that, your question. So let's come back to it. The davkash ikra klu shal matchos, or ikra klu shal eitzrach shema ap barzel, kavua bo hol v'efshel l'shtam shal v'lo barzel, ein tzarech tevila. Av kli am tukum yisidu shal barzel, v'lo yisidu shal efshel l'shtam shal, v'nim tzarech tevila. Says, what if you have a kli that just has a little metal in it? So he says, depends. If the metal is on the inside and is necessary, then you have to tovel it. But if the metal is on the inside, we already know the opinion of the Kaver, if the metal is on the outside, you don't have to tovel it. If the metal is not important, then you don't have to tovel it. The metal is not an significant part of what makes it work. But if the metal is on the inside and the metal makes it work, then you would have to tovel it.
This big gap is going back on the whole seven up to now.
Yeah. Okay. Ches. Hashoel. Now we've left the issue of what it's made out of, and we're going on to what's considered buying from a goy. Hashoel osocher kli me'akom inoton tefila. Right. If you borrow or rent a kli from a goy, it doesn't need toveling. This is a little counterintuitive. Because why doesn't need toveling if you borrow or rent it from a guy? So the Gemara says because it's not like the case of Kli Midyan when they acquired it permanently. The explanation, which we'll see as Nafkamina, as the Rishonim and Achronim give, is because the whole point is to take it out of goy and bring it to Yadus, to Jewish, to give it a Jewish nature. And over here, if it belongs to a guy, it won't help anyway to total it. So you might have thought, well, if it won't help to total it, then just don't use it. But no, in this case, since Tfilas Kelim was primarily an aseh and not a lav, it's not that primarily you can't use a goyish kli. It's that primarily you have to tovel. So therefore, if you can tovel, you have to tovel, like if you bought it. But if you only borrowed it for goy, then it's not shy to tovel. So paradoxically, since you can't help the situation anyway, then you are exempt. We'll have to see, you know, to what extent you can take advantage of this. It's going to be machlokes a little later. But clearly, in a classic case, you just borrow or rent something from a guy. Someone just asked me the other day, they actually had. They rented kalim from a goyish company, obviously not to use for cooking, because the kalim were trays.
Or you could rent them and use them for, and kasher them from a goyish company.
No problem, because they're potter. Avon Yisrael can only act with Yiluch Aver, Taun, Tfilah, Shuan, Shchai, B'yar, Rishon. However, if a Jew bought kalim from a goy, meaning all kalim nowadays that are made in China, the Jew bought kalim from God, I borrow them from the Jew. Let's say Jew's not so from. Right? So the Jew's not so from, and I borrow from him. Then it's chayiv in tefillah, because even though I just borrowed it, but Lamaisa, it became chayiv when he took them. So if it became chayiv when he bought it, then anyone, no one's allowed to use it without tovling.
What's the status of a machalos about Jew?
Interesting question. I haven't seen that specifically discussed in the poskim here. But from what I've seen from, you know, sort of modern-day posthum is we seem to treat him as a Jew in Hilchos Tfilas Kelim. Meaning, that could sometimes be a chumrah, right? If a totally non-firm Jew bought a kli from China, from the supermarket, right, totally non-firm Jew bought silverware at Costco, then I can't borrow it and use it without toveling, because even though he's totally not from, he should be from, and he's really chayav to tovel them. So the chiyav that descended upon the kelim. V'yesh misha omer shem lo lo chavishon tzorech suda elo lachto klofim kayotze bo ein tzorech lehat bilo. This is a, we'll see, this is a little controversial. So he says, what if, clearly a non-clay suda is potter and toveling. That was clear in the Gemara. There's a hav mina, I forget who it was, had a hav mina to tovel the scissors you use for tailoring. Then not only clay suda in this parsha in the Torah. The question is, what if you have a non-clay suda that you use on a one-time basis for suda? So, if this guy bought it to cut klofim here, meaning like cloth, right? Or whatever it is, right? This guy bought a knife or scissors to use for non-food uses, so he's perfectly okay. Of course he doesn't have to total it. And I want to borrow it once to use for food. Right, let's say he bought a pocket knife. His pocket knife is not used for cutting food. His pocket knife is used for, I don't know, whatever they use pocket knives for. And I want to use it once to cut food. Then I don't have to tovel it because the owner doesn't use it for food. It's not a clay suda. And if it's not a clay suda, it's potter.
If you own the cafeteria restaurant, it's not kosher. Besides, there's not other issues involved. Is he hanging still on and it's going to use non-kosher food?
I would think yes. You know, forget about the restaurant cafeteria issue for a second here. L'chora, yes. Because the fact that he's using it for treif is, I don't think that has halachic valence. Like, he shouldn't be. So I think that, yeah, you don't need cafeteria, right? Let's take a simpler case. Bavonoseno or Robin, you know, there are plenty of non-firm Jews who eat treif, right? So there's still chayim filos kelim. Not to mention the fact that most of what they eat is probably kosher anyway. Meaning, no one only eats treif. I mean, that would be very, very hard to do. You'd have to work very hard in order to only eat treif. I'm sure a lot of people eat like Cheerios with milk, and they eat, other things that they drink Coca-Cola and Nesty and water. So there's probably even people who eat treif eat kosher most of the time because, like, I don't know, like how often can you really eat pork? Probably very unhealthy to have 3 meals a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. They wouldn't last.
How much can we assume that a person does tefillah? When I borrow a person something, do I assume he did tefillah with it?
I think we assume that from Jews did tefillah. Yeah, I think that's...
non-from ones, obviously.
Yeah, I think you have to assume non... You never know, but I think you have to assume that someone's not from, then they didn't total their tefillah. I think you have to assume.
So
that's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I heard no. Okay. Yeah, so I think they don't. So that's a problem. If you have Jews who aren't properly from, then you might have to be choshed they didn't tell. You might have to even assume they didn't tell with their caleb. If you have Jews who are from Jews, obviously not every from Jew is perfectly educated. There are a lot of from Jews out there who don't know halachas properly and who do things wrong. But I think you can assume that they do things right until proven otherwise.
And then on the flip side, at what point can I say a bracha?
You could always ask the person, but let's say you don't ask the person. Let's say you have a Masorti Jew, and I would not, and you buy Caleb from him. I would not say a bracha, because I'd still be nervous that maybe he did. You never know. Like, maybe he went to shul, right, and the rabbi gave a fiery speech, and, you know, and he's a Masorti rabbi, right? So he knows. Maybe he gives a fiery speech about it, didn't know rice, and it says something in Gemara someplace in a lot of other books, then. But if he gave a fiery speech about how, you know, your unborn baby's gonna, you know, be born with, you know, some terrible disease if you don't tell your Caleb, then everyone got right away and told their Caleb. So you never know what might have happened. Am I pretty much on the ball?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
No, I don't know like this. It's amazing. It's like most of us come from a very different place, and we don't think these things work, but it just, you have to know your crowd, and you have to know who you're talking to. Okay. Anyway, so this, however, is controversial. If you look at the Shach and the Taz, he says, not so much this heter. Maybe no. Maybe once a Jew buys it, that even if he intended it for non-food and you borrow it for food, you should still have to tovel it. Well, so the Shach and the Taz say, you should tovel it without a bracha. Okay, there's a big deal in the Achronim, but it's, you know, probably better to be machmir, like the Shach and the Taz here. And even if your friend has a non-food kli, if you want to borrow it for food, then you should tovel it. Then you should tovel it without a bracha. And the Rama adds,
you're borrowing, not buying.
Right. Yeah. If I buy it, then for sure I have to tovel the bracha, because I'm the owner, and how's the kli suda? Right, if you have a scissors that you use for cutting milk bags, and I decide I'm using them for cutting chicken, right? So let's assume that you manage to keep it powered, right? So you use the scissors for cutting milk bags, this is only your milk bag scissor, you are pucker. If I buy it to cut chicken, of course I'm chayiv. Now it's a kli suda. The only controversial part is if I borrow it to cut chicken. Do we say it's not a kli suda, because who am I? You're the owner, and if it's not a kli suda for you, it's not a kli suda. Do we say no? Now I want to use it for a kli suda. So that is a machlokes, and it's better, it's proper to tov without a bracha. However, there are masses of all a rishon, also l'shtanus l'tzarch suda, afu l'derech harayv l'tzvila, afu shalach l'tzarch klafim, b'chein im, what's that word? It didn't come out of my shulchan. Kano, yeah, I have the old one. In Kano, Yisrael, Hashem, and Arishon, Tzarech Suda, Tzarech Tefila, Gav Hashem. So for sure, if the second one buys it from the first one, of course it needs Tefila. The question is, what if you just use it ba'arai for other things? So, what the din of using it, meaning, what if you use it normal use, right? The regular use is non-Suda. But the arai use is for Suda. So there are two cases. The first case was the regular use is non-Suda of the owner, and the arai use is for Suda of the borrower. In this case, the Mechaber says Pater, but the Shach and the Taz say Safek, you should tovel without a bracha. The second case is if the owner uses it, usually for non-Suda, but by arai for Suda, maybe that's worse. If the owner used it sometimes for Suda, that's a Kli Suda. So it's what the owner does sometimes. So in this case, the Rama said that you are Chayav, because if the owner used it even Ba'arai for Suda, then that's considered a Kli Suda, because he's the owner. Now, this one is not so... What? Sorry, I apologize. That is true. He says usher to use it. Halakha l'maisa, even this is controversial. The Brit Chodesh, I don't know if it's on the side here. But the Brit Chodesh says no, we don't really care about the arai use, we only care about the kfiyas use.
So, and you see some of the Achronim hiding in different Rechivik and Pitzvei Tshuva here. Some of them are assumed that we don't have to worry about Arai uses. So, Allah Lamaisa, it's not so posh if it's only used by Arai. So, you should, Allah Lamaisa, you should Tova without a Bracha. Because it's not so clear. Even the Ramah, he didn't necessarily say with a Bracha. But even the Ramah with a Bracha, it's not so Pashut. And therefore, you should tovel it without a bracha. And halacha l'maisa, in some cases, the achronim uses the tzirich l'hakel. You know, it's a better tzirich l'hakel when you're not the owner. But even if you are the owner, that if it's only an arai suda use, then that's a sniff l'hakel together with other factors.
Can you
I hear the taina, but I don't see it.
They say the same with aluminum pans.
Yeah, but that no, not about aluminum. Oh,
because you turned it wasn't actually the clear so you made it. Really?
It's gemara. Really? I don't know. I hear that. I don't know. Not doesn't sound so great to me, but it could be. It depends what you use them. If you use them for the milk bags, then no, because you don't use them for the, they don't touch the food, they only touch the bag. And don't tell me they get a squirt of milk on them, because that's by accident, that's not the intention. So the scissors for the milk bags, you don't have to tovel. That's why can openers, you don't have to tovel. But scissors for cutting food, there aren't that many types of food items you cut with scissors, right? But chicken is a classic one. Anything else you use scissors for? I can only think of chicken. I'm sure my wife could think of more examples, perhaps, but... And a lot of things work, but they're not comfortable among civilized people. Anyway, so that then you for sure do have to tovel the chicken scissors. Then you won't have to tovel them. Okay, but the milk bag scissors you don't have to tovel.
Even if you only use it to cut while raw.
Cut what?
If it's only while raw, it's like similar.
So if it's only while raw, then you go back to. Then you go back to the machlokas about something which is only used for something that's not fit for eating, but you could use it for something that is fit for eating, and then everyone agrees you should tovel it without a bracha. Right? So you still need to tovel it, just without a bracha. But I think most people don't have separate chicken scissors for raw and cooked chicken. I think they have scissors.
We never ever cut.
Oh, you never cut chicken after it's cooked?
Yeah.
Okay, so someday you should be zochet to an oven where you can fit the chicken and cook it before cutting it. And then you'll see. Okay. Where are we? Okay. This brings up a very, very crucial issue, which I have a daf makoros about in someplace. 1 second. It's the one I gave out last time, just the other side of the page. If anyone doesn't have it, please raise your hand. It has an English title.
Practice to part of this.
Okay. Anyone else raise your hand? Last chance? Okay.
Did you speak about the last point or nothing to say?
What?
There was nothing to say about the last point, am I right?
No. Okay. The whatever, there's always what to say, but nothing necessary. Here we get to the discussion of we'll come back to, obviously we have to discuss this fiscal tshuva, but the question of the three basic shitas when it comes to eating in people's houses or in establishments such as restaurants and hotels where they didn't tovel their kelim. This is a very, very big burning issue of halakha l'maisa because unfortunately there are people out there who don't tovel their kelim. And unfortunately there are people out there who don't tovel their kelim. And the question is, are you allowed to eat in their house? Like, even if they get you special kosher food, or if they normally eat kosher food, they're just ignorant of the halakha of tefilas kelim. So if they're a guy, then you're beseder gomor. 1 second. Let me just see if I can find the page I am looking for. Alright, doesn't matter. If they're a guy, then you're beseder gomor. Let's say I go to a guy's house, and all he gives me is Coca-Cola and, you know, and cereal and milk. So that's fine. I can use his metal spoon to eat the Cheerios and milk. I can drink Coca-Cola out of his glass, because he's a guy, and that's borrowing from a guy.
Question is, what if it's a Jew who doesn't tovel their kalim? They're not from, they don't tovel their kalim, but they have kosher food. Or what about a hotel or a restaurant? Doesn't show tovel their kalim, but it has hashgacha to make sure that the food is kosher or whatever. I just go in and have, you know, and have Coca-Cola, right? Friendlies. Apparently there's some place in America called Friendlies, and apparently the ice cream there is kosher. So what if this Friendlies is owned by Mr. Goldberg? And Mr. Goldberg's not the holiest yet ever. The Friendlies, normally you wouldn't want to touch the 10-foot pole what they serve there. But I want to eat the ice cream. But the ice cream is a glass dish and has a metal spoon, or I want to, you know, get a glass of water, or whatever the case may be. So am I allowed to? So there are three basic shitos here. If you look at number one, Rav Moshe is the most machmir shita. It says, "Va'ochal b'malon of mesad b'kadomash ain tovin kliim v'nasku funach tichot basar v'dom nachz l'gavik kli makos ozuchuchis v'ein ansrichel etz makli." He had a kula, but it's a very, very small kula, very limited kula. V'ein mishtamshul tzorach achila afshigam kli shemishtamshul dvarim beishim v'gakin afsham kli sudet tzrichem tzvila v'kemi shein amaychol neser yishlaat b'shasat chach lito misham yadayin o'vdar shein tzorach tzvila v'lechol. Etc. So, what does Moshe say? He says that you're not allowed to eat in a hotel or restaurant or lechora person's house that doesn't tovel their kalim. Vizel, shalom al Yisrael. It's usher. What's the only kula he gives you? He says, if you're not really using the kli, then it's mutter. What does it mean, not really using the kli? Let's say they serve you, some of these examples are perhaps not proper for a polite company. Let's think of a very polite example. Let's say they serve you a piece of cake on a glass plate. Says, yeah, you could take the piece of cake and eat it, because even though it's a kli suda, and the guy who's serving it to you is using it as a kli suda, but you're not using the plate, you're just taking the cake and eating it. The cake doesn't accomplish anything. What does the plate do? It keeps the guy's tablecloth clean, but it doesn't help you eat. Right, so I'm allowed to take the cake and eat it with my hands because I'm not really using the plate. Even if they give me on a glass dish meat, I'm allowed to take the meat, pick it up with a plastic fork, if they give me a plastic fork or with my hands, and put it in my mouth and eat it because I'm not really using the plate. So he's a very limited heter. If you're not really using the kli, you know, if I go to someone's house and, you know, they bring out cookies on a glass dish that wasn't tovel, I can take a cookie and eat it. B'shasachach. Because I'm not really using the plate. However, if I really need the kli, which is most of the case, like, what if I need silverware to eat something, and that silverware is metal, like, real, right, permanent silverware, then there's no heter. What if it's a glass cup, and I need to drink out of the cup? Then, then he says there's no heter. What if it's like soup, right? Soup needs a bowl, because you can't eat it without the bowl, it would just spill. So then there's no heter. So Moshe gives no heter at all if you're really using the kli.
When he says to take off the plate, does he literally mean I have to pick it up? Or what if I kind of cut on the plate?
It doesn't sound like you could cut on the plate. I never asked, but it doesn't sound like it.
He says that I always still use the plastic silverware and the plastic plate, so therefore I don't really need this plate.
No, but if right now you don't have a plastic silverware, then you're using it.
And if I do,
then use the plastic. Valid. Then use the plastic and you're fine.
Does it have to be like a one time taking out the food? Let's say if it's like you can just pick at it.
No, Lachor, you can pick it as much then many times as you want. Because what do you care? Take away the plate, pick it off the tablecloth. Right?
I get a call before we had a restaurant. I just say, like, you don't need that fork. You could get in there if you want.
No, because you're using, because you're clearly using the fork. Okay. I guess you could ask. This is a question for Rabbi Miller, not a question for me. It's clear that you're using the fork. Okay, then you go to whoever gave the chapur. I think that was Rabbi Miller's part. It's his problem, not mine.
Doesn't he say, you don't need the fork?
Yeah, exactly. Take it with your hands. But you can't use the fork. He didn't say you can use the fork. He says you can take it with your hands.
How about if it was cooked in the kelim?
That doesn't matter. It doesn't chafe up the food just because it was cooked in the wrong kelim. Cooking an untovel kalim doesn't chafe up the food. That's the very end of the simon. Mefurish v'chaper, I believe.
Could this be a kula with regard to our chatos? Is there no other plate, and you don't really need a plate?
I don't think so. I think it's two different issues. There it's a matter of derechiba and kirov, etc. Here it's a matter of the technical stamshas of the kli. Basically, here it's a matter of your relationship to the kli. There it's a matter of your relationship with your wife. I think they're two different, from a lumnish perspective, they're two different issues. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you want kulas in achakas, no problem. I give you lots of kulas in achakas. Just, this isn't one of them. Okay, now, however, most achronim, most achronim have a this is Rav Moshe. Basically, Rav Moshe says, everything's awesome. Right? Most achronim hold a middle shita, where they say private houses are usher, but restaurants and hotels are mutter. Where does that come from? Let's look at the Pesukei Tshuva, some kind of test. It's also on the page here, right? So the Binas Adam has a big kula, right? Here it's what we're going to do here is build a kula on a kula, and hope it doesn't collapse. The Binas Adam has a big kula in the Pesukei Tshuva right here, some kind of test. Who says, what if, again, we don't do this nowadays, I'm pretty sure, but what if you want to make a big party, so you borrow kalim from the storekeeper, you know, the hardware store guy, he sells kalim. So you borrow kalim from him for your party, and you'll give it back afterwards so he can sell it. So again, I'm pretty sure nowadays that's not so cool. This guy out, the hardware store owner, would lose a lot of business. But in the old days, it was more... But in the old days, it was more makabel. So what if you borrow the stuff from the store owner? Do you have to tovel it? Do you have to tovel it or not? So so he says that basically for the here's his big kula. For the storekeeper, is this a klesuda or is this a non-klesuda? So he says for the storekeeper. Now you might say it's a klesuda. He's going to sell it to people to eat with, right? It's not like he's a pocket knife and he doesn't know what the buyer's going to do with it. He has, like, drinking glasses, and he has forks and spoons. It's obvious they're for Suda. So you might vote the Kli Suda, the Venus Adam, the Kuli says no. Since he's only going to sell them, that's not called Kli Suda, that's Kli Schor, that's tailored for different use. Those are used to sell, not to eat. It's a Chiddush, because you're only selling them to eat on. But he's Kiddush, that those are called Kli Schora, and therefore, you're someone who's borrowing a Kli Schora to eat on it on a one-time basis, and according to the Mechaber, you don't have the Tovo. And then he says that even though the Shachem Tazer Machmer, his case was glass, so maybe you can rely on the more Mekel Deya, and many people, even a meddler, rely on the more more Mekel opinion. So that's his Bevinas Adam's Kiddush is. Now he says it gets a little tricky. If it breaks and you'd have to pay him the full retail price, he considered that more like a sale with an option of returning. But if it breaks, you only have to pay him the wholesale price, then he considered that to be an authentic borrowing. So he says, if you borrow it, and you don't have to pay the retail price, if it breaks, you just reimburse him the wholesale price. Then, that's either borrowing a non-klei suda, a klei schora, and you are pater from tovling. That's the kula of the Binas Adam. That's one kula, and so crazy from a common sense perspective, even though they're clearly food utensils, but right now they're not meant for use with food, they're meant to sell in the store. Only after they're bought are they meant to be used. The Shevet Sofer, since Eliezer quotes here, the famous school of the Shevet Sofer, takes it one step further. The Shevet Sofer was dealing with, I think, with the seltzer bottles. Do you, anyone? No. You guys, any of you guys remember when I was a little kid? Now, of course, what do all little kids remember about the seltzer bottles? The fact that you could squirt your brothers with them, right? And that was really cool, Masha Enkin, and any other type of food packaging that you get in your house, because they had spritz, like they had a little lever that you would, like, press it, and it would spritz out. So that was a lot of fun, although you would get in trouble. But what I remember besides that about seltzer bottles is that, now, I'm of the generation where my parents didn't get, like, random deliveries to their doorstep of food items. They went to supermarkets and such. But my grandmother used to get seltzer bottle deliveries to her house. She wanted the seltzer, so the seltzer guy would come and he would bring like seltzer bottles to her house, and then she would use up the seltzer and leave them outside, and he would bring new ones and take those ones, right? This is like before recycling is fashionable, before like deposit, bottle deposits, etc. And they had it already. But the old-fashioned way, they wouldn't like throw it into a truck and dump it into the ocean and pretend to melt it down or something. They would actually just bring it back and fill it with seltzer and give it to the next guy. I'd like to hope they cleaned it with soap or something, but I'm not going to promise. Anyway, so that's the seltzer bottle. So the Shemit Sofer says, what's with these seltzer bottles? Problem is, the Jewish guy is using, the Jewish guy didn't total the seltzer bottles, so how can I use them? So, says the Shevet Sofer, says, how come no one totals them? And he says, no problem, this is Sisal Yos quoting Shevet Sofer, I know Shevet Sofer on the Bar Ilan. he quotes our,
wasn't it just who owned them?
The company owned them.
And the company was Jewish?
Yeah, if the company was Jewish, no problem. The company, let's say the company's Jewish. I guess in the Shevet Sofer's town in Hungary, the company was Jewish. So he says, this is the famous Kula. He says, this is not Klei Suda, this is Klei Schora. And it's no problem, just like the case of the Bina Sadon. What makes this Klei Schora? Why is the Kula on top of Kula? Bina Sadon says, the hardware store guy has drinking glasses. That's not Klei Suda, because he's selling them, he's not eating. The Shevet Sofer takes it one step further. Here we basically have, it's like a restaurant or a hotel, right? The guy's selling the seltzer, serving it from the bottles, right? Here he's saying, the seltzer company has the bottles. That's not Klei Suda, that's Klei Schora. Why? Because the owner of the company's not drinking from them. He's just using it to sell seltzer to his customers. Now, of course, here he's using it for the customers to drink out of, right? So it's a bigger chiddush of Bina Sadon. The Bina Sadon's chiddush is that something which is intended to eat on after it's bought, but right now I haven't sold it yet, is not a Klei Suda. The Shevet Sofer takes a step further. Something which is intended for my customers to eat from, that's not called Klei Suda. Klei Suda is what me and my family eat from. But what I serve my customers on, that's not Klei Suda. Klei Suda means home consumption, not food industry use. So anything which is used in a business of serving food, that's not called a Klei Suda. That's a big chiddush because every day people are eating and drinking out of this. But since I'm only giving them food to eat and drink to make money as a business and not as part of my regular lifestyle and with my family, that's not called the Klei Suda, it's called the Klei Schora. Tremendous, tremendous kula. But this kula, the Shevet Sofer, is accepted right here by the... by the Tzitz Eliezer, he quotes many Achronim who accept it, and if you look at number 4 in the Yechavah Das, he also quotes many Achronim, who accept this. All these Achronim say that, look, for the owner, it's not Klei Suda, because he doesn't drink out of it. His customers do. So since for the owner it's not a Klei Suda, I'm just borrowing a kli from someone who's not using it for Suda. So therefore it's mutter based on the Mechaber. What? What if the owner eats lunch also? That's a good point. So you'd have to be naked and say that even if the owner eats lunch also, since that's not the main use, then we're not choshish for it, which is a kula. So that's the double kula. A, the Bina Sadon says for the storekeeper it's not Klei Suda. So if I borrow it from him, I'm borrowing something from someone who doesn't use it for Suda. And the Shevet Sofer goes a step further. For the restaurant owner, it's not Klei Suda. And therefore, if I go to the restaurant and borrow his kalim to eat off, I don't have to double them because they're not Klei Suda. That is the tremendous kula of the Shevet Sofer. And the Minhag HaOlam is to rely on this. The Minhag HaOlam is that, in a lot of places they don't require that restaurants and hotels total their kalim, because they assume, like this Shevet Sofer, that anything which is used to serve customers is not called a Klei Suda, that I'm not eating, I'm only serving customers, and therefore, since it's not a Klei Suda, even though you're eating a Suda now, on a one-time basis, you don't have to total it.
So if the owner, let's say he wants to make a Simcha or one of his family members, and like he gets it done for free,
you know, what if he takes some of them home? So that would depend on something which the owner uses by a right for eating, whether that counts as Klei Suda. And the Yesh makom l'hakel even in that, especially for glass, and maybe even for metal, even though it's against the Ramah, but there are shitas to be somachan.
Can we take this clue so seriously that it's a very firm restaurant owner wants to go
I'm pretty sure that I'm not a bucky on this, but I think a lot of generally the Mahadran of Sharon require Tfilas Kalim. But yes, they don't let the restaurant owner make a bracha because of the Shevet Sofer. We at least are, I think everyone is at least makra for the Shevet Sofer that restaurants and hotels shouldn't make a bracha. Now, of course, he could just buy one thing for his house and make a bracha at the same time and cover his bases. But the Ikaron, you know, if I run a restaurant and I have one kli, I just one new pan, and I send it to with a worker, a Jewish worker, the mikvah, the tovo, he would not be able to make a bracha because we'd be choshish for the shevet sofer. Even those who aren't mikvah like the shevet sofer are machmer like the shevet sofer. So that's the second sheet. Rav Moshe says basically there's no kula. Rav Avadya and Rav Waldenberg and Sitz Eliezer and men, all the achronim they quote based on the shevet sofer say, I can't give you a kula for eating in people's houses. That is. I can't give you a cooler for eating in people's houses, but I can give you a cooler for eating in restaurants because that's not a clay suda. And that's what Rav Avadya ends the end of four. B'sikum, moter lecho v'lishto, b'kiasko v'masada, v'bati harachak, sheirim afil chiyodim v'birur sheklei asuda, shimshashon lohut pul kavacha, v'im yirtzabal v'masada v'hachim lahat pul kilim shusud sarko kuchos yafilim lo bracha. That was what you just asked. However, this kula only works for a business establishment. It doesn't work for a private home. So here you have a home, and here you have a business. Rav Moshe basically answers both of them, unless you want to pick up the meat with your hands and put it in your mouth. Rav Avadya and the Tzitz Eliezer, based on the Shevet Sofer, are machmer on a house, but make them in a business based on the Svara of Kli Schora. However, it's very sometimes you ask, what's the Minhag HaOlam? It's very difficult to figure out what the Minhag HaOlam is. But from what I've seen, the Minhag HaOlam is B'Shas HaDchak to be makel even on private homes. You know, someone will listen to this on Yud Torah and start trying that. What do you mean? Obviously, the Minhag HaOlam not before it's getter, etc., etc. But I don't know. Every place I've seen and all rabbis I've talked to out there think the Minhag HaOlam is to be makel. The question is, the Minhag HaOlam correct or not correct? So B'Shas HaDchak, the Minhag HaOlam is to be makel. Yes, go.
Is that for glass and metal?
Glass is always easier to be makel, since it's Rabbanan, as we've seen in some of these tshuvas, but I think the Minhag HaOlam is makel legamri. B'Shas HaDchak. Why is the Minhag HaOlam makel legamri B'Shas HaDchak? There are two svaras in the Achronim. There are two svaras in the Achronim to be makel legamri. The Mincha Shlomo, that's the much more famous one. Now, the Tfilas Kalim book says he spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman about this, and he said, absolutely no room to be makel. But then afterwards, they came out with the Mincha Shlomo, and Rav Shlomo Zalman said, there is reason to be makel. So I guess we'd have to go with what it says in the book. And there's a Shut Beis Avi of Rav Yitzhak Levis, who's not quite as famous, but has a very, very nice svara that's worth mentioning. I think the Tfilas Kalim book quotes it. Yeah?
Just a question I mentioned before. Assuming the house that it's asur to eat, what needs to be tofu? Just the plate and fork that I use, or even let us say, I know he's cooking for me, how the pots he's using.
It's a tricky one. If you tell them to cook, then Lachor, you need to tovel the pots. You can't tell someone to do an Avera.
He invites me over.
So if he invites me over, Lachor, I didn't tell him to cook, so Lachor, you wouldn't strictly have to tovel the pots.
You can't, it's his pot. The question is not what you're going to do with the pot, the question is can you eat the food?
No!
Avadi can eat the food. The question is can you eat the food with the fork? The food's kosher either way, right?
I know. So what's so,
the
question?
No, his question is, do I have to tell him? So let's say you're a machmer. You said, I can come to your house to eat, but I have to tovel the silverware first. You also have to tell him I have to tovel the pot first. So the chor is strictly not. Now, what's the svar to be makel? So there are two different svaras to be makel. In the shut face of it, he has a very fascinating svar to be makel. And they're based on two totally different lumbuses. What's the lumbus shut face of it? He said that they're both based on sort of a similar yisod. The yesod is that primarily, is there an answer to eat a non-tovel kelim or a chiv to tovel your kelim? That should be easy. What? What's the answer? Chiv to tovel your kelim. So now the Beis Avi says, hold on a second. He says, who's chayv to tovel their kelim? Not anyone who eats this chayv to tovel kelim. This is his chiddush. Beis Avi's mechadish. Not everyone who eats this chayv to tovel kelim. No, only someone who has bialus over the kelim is chayev. Didn't we say a shoel or a socher is chayev? So what does he explain?
That's a form of bialus.
Shoel and socher is a form of bialus, right? Shoel and socher are like a kinyan lezman. So he says only a shoel and socher are chayev to tovel kelim because they have temporary bialus. But if you go to a restaurant, you're not a shoel on the silverware. You're a mishtamish in the silverware. He says, this ties into, remember the whole discussion of Rashi and Tosfos, etc., about like whether you can eat chametz of a guy? So it's a parallel discussion. If I go to your house and you say, here, sit on the, have a seat, are you lending me your sofa? No, I'm not a shoel on the sofa. I have nothing on the sofa. You're just letting me sit there. Right, if I go to your house and you say, whatever, and you give me a glass of water, I'm not a shoel on the, he's assuming, I'm not a shoel on the glass. You're just letting me use the glass. But I don't have any zechuyos or chiyuvim of a shoel on the glass. So he assumes that when you go to someone's house or to a restaurant or an hotel, you're not a shoel or a socher on the kelim. You're just using the kelim. Since you're just using it, you're not a shoel or a socher, there's no chiyuv. That's his assumption based on Chosha Mishpah, I think, loved this. Go one second. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a much simpler way of being Mekel. He says there are five, then Yachila, Batim Alon, Chadom, Kelim, Shem, Tzvulin. He's talking about Batim Alon, but the logic would apply equally to a private house. Lon Nirek Moshe Kasmar, he doesn't like the Shevet Sofar, Yelach, Shem, Kavis Chora. He says common sense, that's very weak. What do you mean? Something I used every day to serve food to 20 people is not called a Klisuna? Nah, that's not a good Kula. The only reason it's usher to use an untovled kli is because I should tovel it. So he says, it's only usher to use it if I should tovel it. The MK calls that shiachlet bilo. So who is not allowed to use it without toveling? Someone who could tovel it. What if I can't tovel it? So his chiddush is, if I can't tovel it, then I'm putter, then I'm allowed to use it. Now you have to be careful. He doesn't mean if I temporarily can't tovel it or I have a technical problem from toveling. It means if I fundamentally can't tovel it because I don't have the right to tovel it. If I don't have the right to tovel it, then I'm not chayiv in tefillah. If I'm not chayiv in tefillah, I'm allowed to eat. He thinks maybe also an onain could eat without toveling. So what does he say? He says when I go to a restaurant, I don't have the right to tovel their kelim. I'm not allowed to tovel their kelim. I can't take their kelim out of the restaurant. They would call the police on me. So since I don't have the right to tovel their kelim, I'm putter. And if I'm putter from tefillah's kelim, then I'm allowed to eat. Because after all, there's no isser. The isser is just because I didn't do the mitzvah. And the same logic should apply if you go to someone's house. Now it depends whose house you go to. Some people's house, maybe they'd be happy for you to do whatever you want. But, stam, if I walk into someone's house, they don't let me. They give me a glass of Coke. They're not letting me take their glass out in my car and drive it to a mitzvah and tovel it and bring it back. No, I have no right to take their kelim out of their house. They wouldn't trust me to take the kelim out of the house, or they wouldn't let me take the kelim out of their house. So, in that case, I'm putter legamer from toveling in the first place since I don't have the right to tovel it. And therefore, I'm allowed to drink without toveling because I'm putter legamer. That is Rosh Shlomo Zalman's kula. And the Shas HaChak, the minhag, is to rely on that.
Should a learned person rely on this?
I think Mashas Hachak, it's what to rely on. You have to use your judgment. Sometimes it's not always a smart thing to be Nachmer. So, now again, I don't think this means that, it's totally fine, it's perfectly total Lechachila Mahadrin. No, it's better to not have to rely on any Kulas. But it's definitely what to rely on, Mashas Hachak, which sometimes can happen. The difference between the two svaras is they're both based on the so that if you're not chayiv to tovel, then you can eat. But Rav Shlomo Zalman says you're not chayiv to tovel because you're not allowed to tovel. And the base Avi says you're not chayiv to tovel because the mechayiv doesn't apply to you because the mechayiv comes from bialus. So the base Avi says the mechayiv comes from bialus. Rav Shlomo Zalman says the mechayiv comes from the yecholus.
It's all the same, very similar, but alumnus is two different points.
Are we talking about, like, it'd be weird if he handed me a glass and I just ran out and went to the mikvah and came back, or if I explained to them, you know, I only eat. Most people that I know that don't toilet dishes, but if I explained them beforehand, I don't think they'd have a problem with me taking a cup to the mikvah.
I don't know. Might be your problem. I'm not sure that you're right. I think people would be afraid of it breaking. I don't mean that they're all like Stalinists who like would the Shita not want to do anything religious. I just think that if people were not otherwise, you know, committed, then I mean, they do break sometimes, right? They're not crazy for thinking it'll break. Like, you know, I know, like 9 out of every 10 glasses I buy, you know, make it to my cabinet, and one of them breaks on the way to the mikvah or not. It's not a big deal because the other 9 will break within a couple of months anyway. Like, no glass has a shelf life, you know. I guess the shelf life of glass is about the same as like bread or milk in my house. You know, last a week or so. And then, you know, with a lot of kids, Kananahara, so you go through a lot of bread and milk and drinking glasses. Okay. Now, Sahara. Okay, Baiter. Sif Tes. Okay, so this is a very halacha l'maaseh dig in here. Sif Tes. This is the Gemara. The Gemara says, what about, this doesn't happen so often nowadays, although I guess maybe it would sometimes, what about pawnbroking, right? What if you give your kalim as a, or the guy here, in this case, gives his kalim to you as collateral for a loan, right? There's still pawn shops. So this can happen. What if the guy brings, Mustami's not going to bring his, you know, regular stuff, but something's going to very fancy stuff, right? You could have silver, or I don't think of gold that much nowadays. You have a very fancy silver Kiddush cup, so the guy brings it to your pawn shop and pawns it with you, Mashkanza. So, Mishkin overcome Fleet Yisrael. The Gemara basically has a suffix about this, right? There's a case when he totaled it. Arzutra, whoever was, totaled it. They're not sure. Does that mean every time you get a mashkin from a guy, you have to total it? Because mashkin counts as buying from a guy? Or does that mean only in this case he knew that the guy didn't want it back? So this case was a total sale. So basically, in a regular case of mashkin, we're not sure. So the Achronim, the Rishonim argue based on an issue that really comes to a head in Sif Yodalad, perhaps. But it's a suffix. It's anybody's list in the Gemara. So what's the din of a suffix in Tefillas Kalim? That depends on the Tefillas Kalim is Daraisa or Drabanan. I think most Rishonim, well, it's hard to count, hold that. Or Vida probably did somewhere, but you have to look it up. Most Rishonim, I think, hold that Tefillas Kalim is the Oraisa. However, the Ramban, at least on the Torah, seems to lean towards saying that Tefillas Kalim is only an Asnachli Amud Rabbanon. The Rambam, now is not the time, but you know the Rambam has a slightly different way of classifying and different Lashonos than we're used to. But he said the Divrei Sofer makes it sound like it's the Rabbanon. So basically the Rambam sounds like the Rabbanon, Vizoshitase Paskin Lakula, in a Bible of Ishita. But the Rosh says, no, it's Doraisa, we should Paskin Lachumra. Halacha Lamaisa, we assume Tefillas Kalim is Doraisa, we Paskin against the Rambam, against the Ramban of the Torah. That, not even clear if the Ramban helped with Ramban al-Torah, but that it's Doraisa, and therefore we pass in the Chumrah. So therefore, what do we see? Mishkin overcome Kli Yisrael Nirv Das Ha'akum Shirotzul Shakub Yonatan Tvila. If it's clear that he wants to leave it with you forever, if it's clear that he doesn't want it back, then, you know, that's often. People go to, like, where do you sell secondhand stuff? So you go to a pawn shop, and you pawn it. Now, often when people go to a pawn shop, it's because they're desperate for money, and this is something they really like, and they're hoping that to get more money and redeem it from the pawn shop. Right? But often people bring it to a pawn shop, and they don't want it at all. There's no second-hand store. The pawn shop is a second-hand store, so they say, oh, let me pawn this and get some money. But they don't really want to pay back the loan. They really just want to sell it. So if it's clear that you can tell from the guy's face that he just wants to sell it, then you have to total it. That's the force of the Gemara. What's the question? What if you don't know? So if you don't know, then you total it without a bracha, because it's a suffix. So suffix or machmer, but obviously without a bracha, like in all suffix derisas, and you total it without a bracha, or
preferably buy another kli that's for sure chayiv and make a brach on that other kli and tovel it with that other kli. Here we have a big machlokas, agav. The Pesachei Tshuva points out in Sifkat and Yud Aleph that since this is only a suffik, if it's authentic pawning, authentic pawning is only a suffik, so even though we're machmish over that bracha, that's in metal, Caleb. But if it would be glass, then you could be makel, so then it's suffik or bottom lakula. That's the pre-chadash in the Pesachei Tshuva here. The more interesting machlokas is the machlokas between the shach and the taz. What's the suffik? Right, what's the suffik? So, what's the three cases? If you know he won't redeem it, then we said you're chayim. That's partially mara. Then there's a case where you don't know. Then there's a case where you know he does plan to redeem it. So, if you don't know, so that seems to be the suffix in the Gemara. What's the suffix? The Rambam says suffix we make it because he thinks feels kelim drabana. We paskin feels kelim drabana. So suffix we're machmer and metal and make it on glass. But what if you know he does plan to redeem it? So that's machlokes between the shach and the taz of what the suffix is. The shach says this is a suffix vincius. What he plans. The suffix is, it's a suffix vincius. You don't know if he plans to redeem it or not. That's why it's a suffix. And therefore, says the shach, if you know for sure that he does plan to redeem it, then you're putter. However, the Taz and the Prichadosh say that's not Shach in the Gemara. If you look at the Lashon in the Gemara, Shach is very dachlik in the Gemara. They're okay. Dachlik Shach in the Gemara also Pshatim. Shach is very dachlik in the Gemara. The Taz and the Prichadosh say that no, it's a suffix bedin whether Balchov Kone Mashkon counts as a kinyan for tefillas kelim or not. It's a suffik b'din, whether the kinyan of a mashkon counts as tefillas kelim or not. Therefore, even if you know he's going to redeem it, even if Eliyahu came and told you next Wednesday at 4 p.m. he's going to come in with a suitcase full of cash and redeem it, it would still be a suffik. Because right now you have a balchov kona mashkon, that's going to be one month later in morning seder, right now you have a kinyan mashkon on it, maybe a kinyan mashkon counts as a kinyan. So this is the machlokes, whether it's a suffik b'nfias, but if you know he's going to redeem it, then you're potter, or no, it's a suffix that din, whether Kenyan Mashkon counts as a Kenyan or not, and therefore, even if you know he'll redeem it, it's still a suffix.
What's the box bar that you have to tell it even if he plans to redeem it?
No, that's this, because even though he plans to redeem it, right now you have a partial Kenyan called Balchov Kona Mashkon. A Balchov acquires rights in the Mashkon. Therefore, maybe that counts as, even though he's going to redeem it, meanwhile you've bought it. Then he'll buy it back. That's what Balchov Kona Mashkon means. You didn't just lend him money. You bought it and then he buys it back. I mean, I'll have to see. This is totally on the whole Machlokes Rishonim when we get to that Lamed Aleph, what Balchov Kona Mashkon means.
This Balchov Kona Mashkon is a pawn shop? Is a mashkon the same halacha?
A pawn shop is a mashkon. No. If a pawn shop is not a mashkon, what is?
I thought a mashkon is when you take a loan.
No, you're not. No, you're not. In a pawn shop, you're giving to his collateral to make sure. Now, you'll say shas halasso, lo b'shas halasso. So, that's an interesting question. Is there a difference between shas halasso and shlo b'shas halasso? L'mayis v'echron, don't bring it in. It doesn't come so much anyway, so we're not going to get into it. And the only difference I can think would be that a pawn shop is b'shas halasso, and the Gemara seems to say they're talking about shlo b'shas halasso. But even that's complicated.
So just because you say it's a suffix in the din here, why does that mean it's also a suffix in the third category?
Ah, because the suffix is the etzem rights of is the etzem rights of collateral count as ownership or not? So even if you know he's going to redeem it, right now you've acquired the rights to use this as collateral.
It's the same suffix. Yeah,
yeah, it's the same suffix. Okay. The ma'ma ends in lasot neshtakeh v'yadu yachshav yilen v'lo bracha. Okay, that makes sense. Since we paskin the suffix, so in the end, if the 6 months end and he doesn't redeem it and you keep it for yourself, then you have to go back and tovel again without a bracha, because this is an important cloud that sneaks in here. If you tovel something before you were chayiv, you have to tovel it again. So in this case, you tovel something when you were suffik chayiv. So now it's suffik needs to be tovel again when you acquire it forever. So therefore, you tovel it again without a bracha. So the shach here in Simkat Mechaf, we don't have time to get into, but he says something which is very difficult to understand, and all the achronim reject him.
So how do we pass it through the shach like that?
Doesn't really come up, but I think most people agree with the Taz and the Prechadosh, because the Gemara sounds very explicitly like the Taz and the Prechadosh. Okay.
So why do we have to tovel it again? Which situation?
If you did tovel it without a bracha when he pawned it.
Don't know, or he knows.
Yeah. And then in the end, he never came back and you kept it. Then, since you might or might not have done a proper tefillah, you have to tovel it again without a bracha. Yud. Yisrael shenasan kesef l'uman akam aslo menekli ein otzer tefillah. This is a big machlok shoshonim, because after Ramah says, v'yesh cholkin, v'yesh l'tovel of lo bracha. This is a tremendous machlok shoshonim between, Tosfos is, he also quotes here from the Mordechai, but in the Beragola, parentheses say Mordechai, in the Beragola, Tosfos in the Rush, right? Tosfos in the Rush versus the Ritzbah, the short quotes in the Ritzbah, is Machmir. What's the machlokes? I give metal to the guy to make a kli out of. So, it's my kli, right? What's the havmi that it should be his kli? In four words. Uman konu b'shvach kli. If you pass him, which many of you shouldn't do, that uman konu b'shvach kli, meaning an uman how do you translate uman in a way that won't mess me up later?
Artisan.
A what?
Artisan.
A self-employed craftsman. If a self-employed craftsman improves my kli, then he actually gets a kinyan in the kli because he really made the kli. So, for example, if whatever the case may be, my pants split apart, so I bring it to a tailor and he sews it back together. So now it's his pants because he made them by improving them. That's Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. That's a big sugi all over Shas with many nafkaminas. So over here, the guy was the Uman, he made this Kli, so he's Kona, so it's his Kli. So when I go, let's say I go and I pay the tailor, or I pay the shoemaker, or I pay the repairman, I'm not paying him for his labor, I'm buying my object back from him because he acquired it with his improvement. That's Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. So over here, since he improved the Kli, he took a sheet of metal and made it into a pan. Therefore, he acquired it, and now I'm buying it back from him, so I'm chayav to tovel it. That is the svara of the Machmirim of Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. What is the svara of the Mekila, the Tosos, and the Rush? They say no. That's when it comes to regular Choshen Mishpat. But when it comes to Tfilas Kalim, then it has to be like the case of the Chumash. The case of the Chumash, it wasn't just the Midianites had a Mammonistic right to their pots. And the Kishmolah, they were really looked like, they were called the pots of the Midianites. So therefore they say, it depends on Shmolah, it depends like who people, it's a little funny, why should it depend on public perception? I'm not sure. It depends who is seen as the owner here. And you know what? If I bring stuff to a tailor, he might technically have a kinyan. But we all know that it's my pants, not his pants. We all know it's my shoes, not the shoemaker's shoes. Right? And we all know if my television breaks and I bring it to a repairman and he fixed it, it's my television, not his television. It's not nikra shem hagoyolov. So that's machlokas. The machabe here is mekel, because, right, Koso says that you're a potter, because lo nikra shmo alav. Who cares about the mominus? Lo nikra shmo alav. Tosfos is in a rush, and this is how the Machaber paskins that you're potter. However, the Ritzbah and others say, Uman Kona B'Shvach Kli. Nope. I don't care who it's called. The Maisa, he's Kona. And therefore, you would be Chayim to tovel it. And the Ramah paskins Yipo below Bracha, because he's Mesupach, who is correct or not. So, Allah Lamaisa, you'd have to tovel it without a Bracha. Yes.
If I bring my pants to Uman, and then he fixes them up, And then if you like it, you can keep it, but even in my mind that...
No, no, we don't mean he's kone legamri. We don't mean that Uman is kone legamri.
What does it mean that he's kone?
So it means... That's an excellent question. There's a lot of lumdus about this, but the simple shot means he acquires a shutfus. Simple as way we say he acquires a shutfus. And when you have something that's owned by shutfus by a Jew and a guy, and the Jew buys the whole thing, then he's chayv to total it. That's the simplest shot. Meaning the tailor now owns part of my pants, but he can't keep the whole thing. But it is an interesting question. It's obviously only a partial kinyan, because lechora, not lechora, because he can't keep it. The Pesachei Tshuva points out here also, since the Ramah paskins it is a suffik, then if it's a case of glass and not metal, then there is makom lahakel beisat sarach. That's he quotes here from the Chachmas Adam, that you know he doesn't love being makel, but he says if you're stuck, there is room to be makel in glass. There is a bit of a machlokes. What the Ritzvah actually meant, whether this is really what the Ritzvah meant or not, right? So I guess I should apologize because I spoke, or rather I wrote on the board too soon. This is the mainstream pshat of what the Ritzvah meant, right? This is the pshat of the Ramah, I think, because the Ramah sounds like the Shach and the Taz, right? This is the what the Ramah sounds like, and the Shach and the Taz are very explicit. They say the Ritzvah means, as opposed to the Ritzvah in the interpretation of the Bach, right? Beis Yosef wonders what the Ritzvah meant, but the Bach, he has a discussion of this, but Lamaisa, Beis Yosef ends up sounding like this, the Ritzvah is an Ulm Kodesh Shavach Kli. But what if the Bach says that say the Ritzvah meant? Right? The Shach and the Taz have a long discussion of the Bach. The Bach says that even he didn't think Ulm Kodesh Shavach Kli. He says that your potter, if all the material was the Jews, if the Jew gave all the material, he admits your potter. He's not the woman called him Shevach Kli. Rather, what's his svara? Your chayav, if Goy provided metal to be mamid. They say, you know, even the Ritzvah didn't say what you guys all think he says. Everyone thinks the Ritzvah says, Ulam Kono Vishvach Kli, so now you're buying him out of the Tobolit. The Ritzvah, the Bach says, no, the Ritzvah didn't mean to be Mekel, to be Macher Ulam Kono Vishvach Kli. He admitted Ulam Kono Vishvach Kli is not a problem. What did the Ritzvah mean to be Macher? Only if you brought it to the Goy to fix and he added metal to be Mam in it. Then we go by the Dover HaMamit, since he added metal, let's say it had a hole in it, and it couldn't hold anything. Right? And so he patched up the hole with his own metal. Only in that case was the Ritzvah Machmir. Because since he used his own metal to be Mamid, now he was Mamid it, so your Chayav to the Goy was Mamid it. That's the Bach's more makel version of the Ritzvah. Right? He says the Ritzvah was not Machmir in the labor of a Goy, only if the Goy provided the materials to be Mamid. However, Halacha L'maisa, we reject this Bach. We assume the Ritzvah was Machmir even if the Goy only provided labor to the Umman Kodem Bishvach Kli, and therefore, even if the Goy only provided labor, those who follow the Ramah would have to tovel without a bracha.
Is what God's saying so clear that when I pay for work and the Goy uses his materials, that's his materials, not that I pay for the materials.
Even if I pay for the materials, so I bought them from a guy, right? So it's totally would be a problem. I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that's relevant. Yeah.
The Taz doesn't have a different understanding than the Shach?
I didn't think so. In the
end.
What?
I thought he said something about goes by the Ikra Kli. Even he rejects the Bach, and then says something else about Ikra Kli. It sounds somewhat similar.
Fine, you'll find me the line. Okay. However, one very, very important ha'ara I wanted to point out. All the later Achronim point out, even though the Chachmah doesn't sound like this so much, all the later Achronim point out that if you look at the Gemara, Ulman Kono V'Shalach Kli only applies to a self-employed craftsman. A self-employed craftsman is Ulman Kono V'Shalach Kli. What's a self-employed craftsman? You know, most tailors and shoemakers and repairmen nowadays, right, are self-employed, right? They're not on your payroll. You don't pay them an hourly wage. They have their own businesses, and they give you an invoice and bill you for things, and, you know, they pay their own Social Security tax, theoretically. They're self-employed. However, a poel who you pay an hourly wage, of course there's no woman code of a Sheva Kli for a poel. If I hire someone and I pay them an hourly or weekly or monthly or annual salary, then whatever they do, I'm doing. Then Yad Poel is like Yad Balavayas for most things. So if I hire someone to do something, not hire a self-employed, but I pay them a salary, then they're not code anything. They're not in business for themselves. They're not having a buying and selling transaction with me. They're my workers. Whatever they do, it's as if I've done it. It's done under my koach. Therefore, the Akron Rambam, this whole chomer only applies to a self-employed uman. But if it's a salaried worker, a poel, or in Israel, Maimonides don't call it a sachir. If it's a sachir, who's a salaried worker, then of course there's no chash uman kon v'shvach kli. And there's no problem whatsoever. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, if a Jew has a company, I'm pretty sure this is how they do. How do they do the badat e'becharedim aluminum and pan that are potter from tovling? So, how do they potter them from tovling? What, some guy in the factory tovels them? Think badat e'becharedim sends someone to the factory to tovel them? So it's no. What they do is that they make an arrangement with the company in China that. They make an arrangement with the company with the factory in China that the Jew should buy all the raw materials. Instead of paying for the end product, the Jew buys all the raw materials, the Jew hires the workers, and then it's Jewish raw materials, and the Jew is hiring the workers, and they're not umans, they're poels, so therefore there's no problem, and you don't have to total them. I think that's how they do it. If you want to pop or something in Tfila, just get a factory in China, buy the raw materials, pay the workers an hourly wage. Not so expensive. It's not gonna put you back too much in China, and then you won't have to worry about tobling. Okay, the Rama continues here and says the mitzvah kesher osu menu kli shel akum sarich tvila. If you start out, and this is the whole class of discussion, which we're not going to get into now, you start out. Let's say the Jew provides half the silver, and the guy provides half the silver. Then he says, for sure you have to tovel it. Because if the guy provided half the silver, then it's mamish, it's half his. Then it's like regular shutfus. And if you have something that's owned b'shutfus by a guy, and then you buy it, you have to tovel it. What about the other way around? The Jewish uman made a kli from the goyim's materials. What if the guy provided the metal and the Jew provided the work? So he says, in that case, also you tovel it without a bracha. Why? Because the same suffix flipped over. On the one hand, you could say, it's the guy's metal, so it's his kli. On the other hand, no, but the Jew put it together. So the Jew is uman kon v'shvach kli. So since the Ramah passed it earlier, it's a suffix whether to follow uman kon v'shvach kli or not. It's also a suffix this way. If the Jew is the uman and the guy owns the raw material, and you tovel it without a bracha. Okay, if Ephraim wanted to follow up on his last comment, he would ask the Graz Kasha here. We're not going to get into it, but theoretically you could ask, if Uman Konev Shachli is only a partial Kenyan, then who cares if the Jew is the Uman? Either way, he wasn't Konev the whole thing, which is the Graz Kasha, or you have to answer it in very fancy lamedus about how maybe Uman Konev Shachli is only a partial Kenyan, but it's a Kenyan on the entire Kli aspect, and therefore in our sense it would be considered a full Kenyan, but that's Takaho, more lumbus than we need him to now. In the end, he says something a little funny. Aval im, asola atzim rosh, shekona matros min ha'akum. Right? This is easy. Then you don't need to total it. If a Jew bought the raw materials from a guy but made everything for himself, then he doesn't have to total it. Because, yeah, he bought the raw materials from the guy, but then he made it all for himself. So that's considered Jewish made clean. Or, he said, nosan miktas matros mishalo. So, this seems to be a bit of a questionable psak. What's the case here? The Jew gave part of the metal. What's the case, though? The Jew gave part of the metal and what? Right? And made it. Right? The Jew gave part of the metal, and the goy gave part of the metal. Right? And the Jew made the kli. So if the Jew made the kli and provided part of the metal, then he's potter. Now here it's not so clear what pshat is. Right? What's the case? This is somewhat questionable. Here you have, right? The Jew gave half the metal and was the Uman, and the guy gave half the metal. So what would you think? You would think, well, maybe we care about Uman, maybe we don't. So maybe we attribute it to the Jew, maybe we attribute it to Shutfus. So therefore, if it might be Shutfus of Jew and guy, then you should have to talk about a bracha, because Shutfus of Jew and guy is Chayev. The Ramah, so that's what the Taz says. The Taz says, nope, there's a Taz Sofer in the Ramah. This line belongs somewhere else. He says, you're Chayev without bracha, because it's a Sofek Kana Mi Shutfus Goyim Yisrael, right? If you ignore the Uman, if you don't follow Uman Konim Shvachli, then you bought something that used to be half and half belonged to a guy in your height.
Let's say you're like a sandwich maker and you told assemble it and then you put it back together.
So what if you have a sandwich maker and you or anything else, you disassemble and put it back together, and then you own the raw materials and you're building it now? Basically, it's called buying raw materials from a guy, right? Once you take it apart, you only bought raw materials from a guy. And when you put it back together, then, of course, it's your raw materials at the time of building, and you built it. Everyone agrees. We don't care who made the raw materials. We care who owns the raw materials at the time of building the kli. So if I buy things from a guy, take it apart, and put it back together, it's now my raw materials, and I'm putting it together. Of course I'm potter. However, you have to know what taking apart means. The Achronim assume, based on sugyas and tyrus, etc., that taking apart only means, if I unscrew it and screw it back together, that's not taking it apart. Taking apart means you take it apart in a way that a Baal Bus couldn't put it back together. Only a professional could. That's what taking apart means. So if I unscrew something and screw it back together, that's not taking it apart. That's routine maintenance. It's only called taking it apart if I need a professional to put it back together. Right? So if I, you know, again, I don't know exactly where to draw the line, but I would tend to assume that if I took something and I didn't just unscrew it, I pulled out all the wires, and now I have to solder the wires back to where they belong. An average Baal HaBas doesn't know how to solder wires. The average Baal HaBas doesn't even know how to spell solder. much less actually do it. So I think in that case, if I pulled out the wires and soldered them back together, then you would call that I'm rebuilding the kli, because it was disassembled, because a regular Baal HaBas doesn't know how to solder. But if I just unscrew the pieces and screw them back together, yeah, an average Baal HaBas knows how to screw and unscrew things back together, and therefore that would be considered to be nothing.
What happens if it's like, let's say not soldering, but you just like, there's a lot of things that go here and go there, and then you like...
I'm not sure where to draw the line, sir, Ian. For sure, if you take a watch apart and put it back together, I think that would be considered to be making it from scratch, not the watch that I have in tefillah. But where to draw the line, I don't know. At a certain point, it's hard to know where to draw the line, I admit.
Say that every Malbec could do just like intuitively, like what they would be able to do, or like if they look it up, would be able to do it easily.
Yeah, now there's the YouTube, anyone can do anything, right? Right, the average Balabais, they say, can even make a nuclear bomb if he has access to YouTube nowadays. I'm not sure it's a good question. I would still tend to think that, I don't know, I still think the average Balabas would just be intimidated to do some things even if he watched it on YouTube. But I'm not sure. It could be now that the YouTube is different. No, I'm not sure. Sorry, Ian.
If you use the kli, for example, it's electric kli. You can fill it with water, even if it's not going to work. You'll have a cold water cuckoo.
Well, it depends what kind of electrical kli. A sandwich maker, if it doesn't cook, it doesn't do anything. A cook-cum taco might be a problem.
If we say, no, use the disc, use cold
water. I don't know. I would be choshish for that. Because sometimes they do use it to keep cold water. I don't know. Sorry, Ian. But in any case, if you poke a hole in it and then, you know, patch the hole, then I think everyone agrees that that would work. At the very least, the hole is in the bottom, right? Okay. Where were we? So the question is, what does this case mean? So however, the argers and the Ramah, right, and the Shach say that you are potter. It's not so clear why you're potter. The Shach has two explanations. Why are you potter? Shach has two explanations. Either make an okimta that the Jew never bought out the guy, right? Maybe you could say, really you're chayav. The case of Rav Potter was an okimta where you made it out of half his materials, half yours, and you never paid him for his half. You're still shutfin.
As long as you're still shuffin, you're chayiv, because that's like borrowing from a guy. It's really shuffin, you're borrowing his half. Or, so he really agrees with the Taz, or he really is Mekel. Why would he really be Mekel? Because you might say, and this would be a Chiddush Svara, that Uman Kone Bishvach Kli plus half the raw material equals Shmoa Lav. If you say, the only reason to not follow Uman Kone Bishvach Kli is because the Uman's name isn't on it. But if the Uman owns part of the material, then it is viewed as his. It does have Shmoa Lav. So it could be that there's a special din of Seraph of Uman Kone Bishvach Kli plus owning half the material, which puts your name on it, which makes it a purely Jewish Kli. Like sort of owning part of the material, mashiv, the Uman Kodesh Shvach Kli, to be a real Kenyan, to be a real recognizable Kenyan. So that's three things. Either you have to deny the Rabbi said this, or say, he said if make it on Kimta, he meant when you never bought out his half, so then it's Pasha, your Potter, because it's still a Goyish Kli. Or you have to make a Chiddush that Uman Kodesh Shvach Kli, if you also have partial ownership, that makes it a real Kenyan. Okay, that's the interview. Yud Aleph, now we can, the rest of these are a little more speedy, if we can withstand the heat. Yisrael Shemachar Kli La'akam Mechadim Lachdom Menetzar Tzvila. If you sell your kelim to a guy, whatever you guys feel, if you sell your kelim to a guy and buy it back when you need to total it, that's what all the Echorim says in the Vistay Tshuva here, that you have to make sure on Pesach not to sell your kelim to the guy, because then after Pesach you'd have to total them. So that's why if you look carefully in all the Mechirish contracts and Mechirish Tameis, they all say you're not selling your kelim to a guy. Some of them say you're selling the bliya in the kli to a guy, but no, you're not allowed to sell the kli to a guy. Then you have to tovel it. About the mission of the other, because don't mean in tzar tzvila. But if you just pawn your kli with a guy and redeem it, then you do not need to tovel it. This doesn't come so often, but I'll just point out that the Shach brings down a machlokes achronim. What if you pawned it intending to leave it forever, and then change your mind and redeemed it? Then he brings a machlokes rishonim whether you would have to total it or not. But in general, it's a little funny because we say if a guy pawns it with a Jew, it's a suffik. But if a Jew pawns it with a guy, and he doesn't have in mind to leave it there forever, then he's putter. So you have to figure out why, but a lot of them are right, because it could be that a Jew has more of a kinyan than a goyish mashkon than a goy has in a Jewish mashkon. Right? This might be one of these cases where everyone's not equal, or Balkov kod mashkon applies to a Jew and not a goy. So it could be, if a goy pawns his kinyan with you, you get a kinyan. Therefore, that creates a suffix. But if you pawn your kinyan with a goy, he doesn't get a kinyan. This is one of the laws where Choshen Mishpa discriminates between Jews and goyim, and therefore when you pawn your kli with a goy, he doesn't get a real kinyan. And therefore, when you redeem it, you don't have to total it. Unless you had in mind to leave with him forever, and then change your mind, which is machlokas in the Shachas of Tafei.
In case where you sold it to a goy, is the problem just the fact that it has his name, like it belongs to the goy, or is there a chance he might have used
it? No, just it belongs to him, even if it was in a vault.
In your house, in your house.
Yeah. Yisrael Vohu Kom Shekonu Kli B'Shutfas, Ein Tzar Tzvila, says the Rema. If a Jew and a guy buy something with Shutfas, they don't have to total it, because it's still Goyish, so what's the point totaling? However, if the Jew then buys the whole thing, if he buys out his partner, now he does have to total it, because now he bought it from the guy. So it just means while there's Shutfin, they're putter. But if you buy out your partner, and now it's 100% yours, you have to total it. If a guy stole your kelim and gave it back, you don't have to total it, because even when the guy stole it, it wasn't really considered his, because he has to give it back, and if the police catch him, then we can give it back. That's a regular thief. It's a regular thief. Even if he's hiding, you can't catch him. They say, still, he can't publicly admit he stole your stuff. If the public realizes, then we can give it back. However, the Sarah, the Moshel, stole your kelim, then whatever, you can't fight the... Can't fight the city hall. So if the Sarah, the Moshel, stole your kelim, then there is no recourse. That's considered to be really his, because no one can tell him what to do. He's beyond the law. And therefore, if it so happens that you get it back from him, you would have to total it, just like you sold it to him. And he sold it back. The
The Achronim seem to assume, the Shach here, that this is talking about in the case where, like, you were Mizyayish. You know, he took it and you didn't really think he would give it back. Like, and then you managed to get it back, then that would be like he bought it and decided to give it back to you as a gift, or probably as a sale, I bet, because he could hold on to it as long as he wants, because he's beyond the law. Yud Beit, Sarach HaHakol Yidei HaKli, right? You have to total the handles also, and we assume that even if the handles are plastic, you still have to total them, right? So you have to total the whole Kli, even the handles, is all considered one piece. Yud Gimel, Sarach LaHaver Chaluda Kodem Tvila. Okay, this is where those of us who learn Hilchot Nida are very familiar with Dina Chatzitza. So you have to remove the rust before toveling or any other dirt. Below Hevir, and what if you didn't? In Makbid Alav Chotzeitz, right? If you're a Makbid, then it's Chotzeitz. This is the rule that Mir HaMakbid is Chotzeitz, and if there's Chatzitza on part of the Kli, and you're Makbid, meaning that you don't want it there, then it's Chotzeitz. But Mi'at She'en O'Makbid is not Chotzeitz. So therefore, Shif Shef V'Nasim V'Chol V'Nishra Dai Ma'ashal Chalush L'Yuchul Haver Al Yidei Kach V'Yuchul She'en Makbid L'Aveinu Chotzeitz. Sometimes you have a used Kli that you need to tovel, and as much as you clean it, you can't get it that clean. Right, that's the case. If you scrubbed it, you burned it, and you still couldn't get all the rust out, then that's called Mi'at She'en O'Makbid. Right, if you cleaned it as much as you can, then what's left is obviously dirt that no one's Makbid on. Because if you can't remove it, then obviously no one minds it being there. And therefore, you'd be allowed to tofel it. So this is why you have to remove stickers, etc. Stickers, people are generally not good. People don't want this, the made in China sticker on their kalim. So new kalim usually don't have dirt, but they have stickers. So you have to remove the sticker. And if you remove the sticker and there's still gook, you have to remove the gook because people don't want gook. But let's say there was some sort of stain, something stuck there that was not removable. Then obviously people aren't not good. Not removable. Then obviously people don't mind. And then you'd be allowed to total it.
Yeah,
oh. Sticker on the bottom is an interesting question. What if you have a sticker where no one can see? Are people mocking on that or not? So some stickers, for sure, like some of these are stickers with instructions. So those you don't have to remove because that's, you know, part of the clean. What about a sticker on the bottom that people are mocking on? So I'm not sure,
what is
but...
The mocking on?
What?
What is the mocking on? If you found it, you'd probably take it off.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little nervous that I think a lot of people are mad that they don't want any made in China stickers or any $12.99 stickers on their on their
company.
That it could be that there might be people are mad, but maybe people even want to show it off. I don't know.
Let's say you take off the sticker and you have there's a bit of it that you can't get off, and you are mad, you really don't want it there, but just the scrub, you're not gonna get it off. Eventually, after 100 times, it's gonna eventually come off.
I don't think there's such a messias.
No, we have things. You need to buy glue gun to you just can't. Not stickers. It's more like glue.
I know, but I think a real balabusta would use glue gun before she serves in it.
It doesn't come off in one time. You scrub and scrub and eventually after a bunch of time.
You're not
because
it's not that fuzzy. I mean, if you're just nervous it's not fuzzy, it's served with it. It's not
time. Yeah, I guess if it's then maybe it's something people aren't makbid on. No, makbid on means you would remove it. If you can't remove it, then I guess you're not makbid.
I got confused the instructions.
But I wonder, because in Hilchot Nida we're makbid, even something you would remove later, although maybe that's because you couldn't remove it now. Yeah.
You mentioned the instruction label, you're makbid to have it, so shouldn't that be a problem?
No, makbid means you're makbid to get rid of it. If you're makbid to keep it, then that's gavaldik.
Okay.
Again, in Hilchot Nida, l'maisa, we try to avoid even things that you want. Let's say a woman has nail polish, right? So she likes the nail polish. She's not going to put on the nail polish. But still, l'chachila, we would try to avoid that. Unless it's a shasat chak. But in this case, also it's better to avoid all shilas. But if you're, let's say you need something, then I don't think we're as machmir here as in Hokus Nidus. It's not a fikaris. It's only an asein. As the Achronim say, it's only a very, since it's only an asein, it doesn't make a fruit tree. Then it's not such a chomer isser. So I think that if there's something that you want there, then we wouldn't be makbid. Then it wouldn't be a problem at all.
Is that on an individual basis or
in Hilchos Nida we're makbid both ways. Could be here also.
You put it on the light, which is the earbuds.
Yes. So this is this might actually make it in some Rish Beis. I'm not sure, but it's definitely in Mishnayos. That this is l'chora not a din of chatzitza. But if you have air bubbles in your kli, that's even worse than a chatzitza. because chatzitza means that it's touching the water, but there's something in between. If you have an air bubble and it's not even touching the water in the first place, that might be worse, even worse than a chatzitza. So you ever know, I'm sure you've all done this experiment. If you take a cup and like you put it in quickly upside down, then it doesn't fill with water, it has air inside or something, and stick it to the bottom or something. So if you have something with a very narrow neck, then it might have air inside, and it'll take a long time for the water to get in. So when you tovel something with a narrow opening, you have to wait for all the air to get out, right? Like for all the bubbles to stop coming up, and then you know it's full of water and you're okay.
Even things that aren't narrow, if you do quickly, it always goes on the kaolin.
Okay, so therefore you have to make sure there's no air bubbles on the kaolin, meaning let the air escape, and don't keep it upside down. If you keep it upside down, the air will never escape. It's one of these cool science experiments. You have to keep it sideways or right side up, and wait till the bubbles stop coming up, and then you know all the air escaped and it's surrounded by water. Excellent. Yud Dalet. If you really don't care either way, but I think since most people might care, so I think you still have to remove them. Let's say I'm a very non-fancy guy, so I don't care at all. You know, I'm a single guy, let's say, and I don't care if I have ketchup on my shirt, and I'll take it off and put it on the next morning anyway, and I don't care if there's mold on my cheese, you know, do your days. I also don't care if I have stickers on my table. But I think it would be machber, since most people would care, then a lot of Rishonim say that's called machber, if most people would care. And, you know, most people, I think, would care. It might depend on the circumstances, but generally we try to be machber on stickers, because most stickers, most people would care. Yod Dalet, Eim Amin Katan Al Tfilas Kelim. This is Lichora, this is totally on a machlokes Rishonim I mentioned earlier. Is Tfilas Kelim Daraisa or Drabana? Because the Gemara says of Sakhan Dalet and Beis that Tanim are Neman to be made on Drabanans, but not on Daraisas, right? That's also many places in Shas, right? Hey, we'll debarim that they're neman to say what you saw when you were cut on, that plonim don't call truma drabanan, and tchum drabanan, etc., etc. We're all familiar with the sugyas. So, normally for daraisas, you need eight echad and be surim to eight echad, but it has to be a gadol. But for drabanans, we believe ketanim. So, what's the din of tfilas kalim? So, if tfilas kalim drabanan, like the Rambam sounds like the Rambam la Torah, then you should believe ketanim. But if it's the Oraisa, like Rashi, the Rashi, and most of you showed him that you shouldn't believe Tanim, then we paskin, Eim Aminim Katan al Tfilas Kelim, that we don't trust Tanim, because Tfilas Kelim is the Oraisa, and a Katan is puzzled to be made on an Isser, the Oraisa. The Avodah Tavul is Negado. Oh, before we get to that line, however, what might you think a Katan would be Neman on? Tfilas Kelim? Play Zechuchis, right? So, this is big enough for me. Let's say I have a 12-year-old son or an 11-year-old daughter who's very responsible. Can I send them to Tovel the Kelim in the mikvah? Or maybe they're lying. Maybe they were lazy and didn't go to the mikvah and just went to play in the park and then came home. So, it doesn't matter what I think. Halachically, a cup and his known emunis for Doraisa, so I for sure can't send them to Tovel silverware. What about glass? Can I send them to Tovel glass? So you think I could, so that's only Drabbanan, you believe Katan and Drabbanan. This is a machlokas quote on both Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Pesach Tshuva. The Rabbi Kiva Eger says he's not so sure, because maybe a Katan is only Naman and Drabbanan for his own things, not if you send him to do your things, like because he's more makbid on his own things, but maybe on your business he's not so makbid. Or the Pesach Tshuva quotes that, I forget from the Prima Gadim, that maybe he's only Neman when there's no Cheskes Isser. But here there's a Cheskes Isser. So there are some svekos about believing a katan in Zechuches. However, the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchas B'dikas Chametz, Simen Tov Lamed Zayin, Simchatan Yud Zayin, seems to be Achriya Lekula. He says that you believe Katanim that B'dikas Chametz, even if you know there used to be bread there, it was Cheskes Isser, and even if it's not their bread, right, even if they were just doing it for someone else. So it sounds like Nachra, the Mishnah Berurah, and most Achronim, that we believe Ketanim across the board in Drabbanans, even Becheskes Isser, again, this Prima Gadim. So if we Pashas, you would think we would believe a Katan about Kli Zechuches, because we seem to be makel against this Prima Gadim, and for sure against this Rabbi Kiva Eger.
How much do we not believe the Katan? Do I then have to say Bracha when I travel there?
Lachora, I wouldn't say a Bracha. Lachora, I wouldn't say a Bracha.
So
So when it says that we don't believe a cup, then that means we believe a guddle. But is that a guddle that's 13 or like that has that you know for sure has Siman?
So that's, I don't remember if that was in the Mischichuva here, but it's the Achronim discuss, right? Can you rely on Chazak Darabah? Is 12 or 13 good enough, depending on gender, or do you need to know that they have Shtei Cyrus? So that is a, on glass, for sure, it's good enough they're 12 or 13. In metal, it's a big deal in the Achronim, since metal is Doraisa, maybe you wouldn't even believe when they're 12 or 13 unless... You know they have Shrei Saros, or unless they're much older than 12 or 13, unless they're a couple years older. Halacha Maisa, the Badei discusses that, and it is here. In the Pisei Tshuva, he discusses at the end of Yudalid, that he brings a machlokas, and he wants to say maybe even for metal kelim, since this is not such a chomer iser, it's only an assay, and it doesn't trace up your food, then maybe you could rely on chazakat derabah. So I think the minhag is to be makel even in metal, that we send 13, 14, 15-year-old boys without checking for shtei saros, or without waiting until they're old enough to grow a beard, which seems to be. The second day of running the Pisei Tshuva here. It's a good question. The end of the Rama says, "Well, Tavol Negadol Have Tvila." Says you cut them in the modest, but if the katan dunks it and you watch him, then of course that's fine because a gadol saw him. The katan just did the tumbling. So now this is the Taz and the Achronim point out. This is 2 days in the Rishonim. Why tefillah of a katan is good enough, right? One day it is because, and this comes up also in Tesvav, right? What does Tesvav say? In Hitl Kelo de Akam Olsa Lahem tefillah v'Einu Neman Ala tefillah. Tesvav gives the exact same rule for a guy as for a katan. If a guy does the tovling, that's okay. But as long as a Jew watched him, right? It doesn't matter who does the tovling. The guy can tovel or the katan can tovel, right? Or the chor can even fall in by accident. As long as you have an adult Jew who's mayin on the tovling. Give me 2 minutes. An adult Jew who is mayin on the tovling. Now, here there's a fundamental machlokas in the Nosei Kelim here. Why this is. So, there's a fundamental machlokas why this is. So, why is tvila kosher if done by a Goy Bekatan is kosher. Why? So one shot is because what are we paskin? Everyone knows what are we paskin? That Tvila needs Kavana for what and doesn't need Kavana for what? For Kachim and Truma you need Kavana, but for Chulin you don't need Kavana. Tvila's Chulin, the Machaber paskin of Chaznida, doesn't need Kavana. Right? If a woman happens to be, you know, walking near the river and falls into the river, or better yet, falls into the lake, falls into the ocean by accident. She falls into the ocean by accident, and Baruch Hashem, the lifeguard, saves her, and she doesn't drown, and everyone lives happily ever after. Then that's good enough to go back and sleep with her husband, because for chulin, you don't need kavanah. That's a simple shot, is that you don't need kavanah. If you don't need kavanah, this is the simple shot of the Mechaber and the Ramah. Right? That's what Kavan Rama sound like. That's the Shark and Tan Paskin. That it's okay because you don't need Kavana. However, the Bach has an objection. The Bach says, The Bach says, but no! But Rama Paskins and Hilchus Nida, he's Machmer, that you do need Kavana for Chulin. It's Machlok Stalaim. So we're Machmer that you do need Kavana. Therefore, you shouldn't need Kavana. So what does the Bach say? The Bach says that we're Machmer in Hilchus Nida that you do need Kavana. So what is he Paskin? So the Bach Paskins, that the Taz quotes the Machan Sif Tes Vav Na on Yudalit, he says Goy Tefillah of a Goy is possible, and Tefillah of a Katan is only kosher if exactly kosher if a Gadol instructs him. Meaning, it's not enough for the Gadol to watch to be made. The Gadol has to explain to him what he's doing, because we Paskin, everyone knows from a Sefer Getin and other places, that a Katan can have Kavana if there's Gadol Omen Al-Gabav, if a Gadol is instructing him, but a Goy can never have Kavana, because Goy, we can't control their thoughts, they have all kinds, you know, it's very hard to make sure they're thinking proper Jewish religious thoughts, as opposed to Ketanim, who are just not so sophisticated, but if we instruct them, then they can think the right way. So that's the Chumrah of the Bach. L'maisa, we Paskin, we seem to not be closer to the Bach here. We Paskin, that is perfectly kosher, the Shastas, even if it fell by accident, it's kosher. Why should it be perfectly kosher? So the Shach explains, because after all, the Ramah Paskin Hilchos Nida, then it's a problem. She has to go back to the mikvah if she fell in by accident. Right? If, I don't know, maybe this would happen. The woman goes to the mikvah and it's slippery, they don't have proper maintenance, and she slips and falls into the mikvah. Right? So then she, you know, she comes out of the mikvah and says, oh, I can't believe I slipped. So we tell her, you have to go back in the mikvah again, on purpose. Because you need kavana, even b'di'evet. So, why over here would we be mekel? So they explain, I mean, they don't make it up, they quote from Rashba, that because even if you say you need kavana for chulin, that fills us in the regular realm of Tumah V'Tahara. You know, which really, you know, like Nida. But over here, it's a Gzeiras HaKosav, which is not in the regular realm of Tumah. Really, it's not tummy. And really, it's not trait. It's just a Gzeiras HaKosav the Tovel. This Gzeiras HaKosav, there's no makor to require kavana. So that they explain, even though by Nida we're makor and say she needs kavana, that's in the realm of Tumah V'Tahara. But over here, it's not within the realm of Tumah V'Tahara at all. It's just a Gzeiras HaKosav. Therefore, you don't need kavana. Getting a little into Rabbi Kefet's setup time. So, and now we only have a little left, but I also have two Makorah sheets that I wanted to discuss. So maybe what we'll do is, on today's Sunday? Yeah. On Tuesday, we'll start with Siftes Zayin. No, we can't wait till Sunday. How about what? How about Wednesday? What? How about Wednesday after Rabbi Weitzman? So let's say Wednesday at 4? Wednesday at 4, I will do Sif Tesvav and the Makor sheets about electric Kalim and. What? And Snapple bottles. And I'll put them in the box so that you can look at them in advance. And then I'll start with Kufka bottles. Wednesday at 4.
I went to do TSK when I brought Ari.
You know what? Anyone who wants to take the two Makar sheets I mentioned, one about Snapple bottles and one about electric cable.